Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So good to have you join us on the broadcast today, and great to be back in the studio. I was out traveling around the state of South Carolina and a little bit of Georgia yesterday. Took a trip up to Atlanta and then picked up my son-in-law from the airport in Atlanta, and then drove over to Savannah, and then from Savannah back here to Greenville. So made a triangle there, and enjoyed a wonderful time there in Savannah. It was just beautiful weather, on again, off again, rain showers, but the weather was 70-some degrees, and enjoyed walking through downtown Savannah with my wife, and also stopped by over there at Paula Deen's place. You know, Paula Deen's got her restaurant there in Savannah, and butter, y'all, I think is what the slogan is over there. It's what the slogan is over there. So we've got to see that a little bit. And a lot of historical things there in Savannah to see as well. So just enjoyed that entire trip, and good to be back here in Greenville and spend a week or so with my son-in-law who's in town. We're really just rejoicing as a church right now. We just have some really fantastic news that has come in, answered to prayer. I can't go into details about it right now, but shortly I think I'll be able to. I've done that to you a couple times here on the radio broadcast, but let me just say, praise God. He answers prayer, and as a church tonight we're getting together to specifically thank the Lord for answered prayer. That's what we're going to be doing tonight. You know, so often we pray and ask something from the Lord, and then when it's given to us, you know, we're like those nine leopards that were cleansed. We never come back to actually thank the Lord for what he's done. And so we're going to make a point of doing that tonight and actually gather together as the people of God and spend that entire time in thanksgiving for answered prayer. I'll bring you up to speed on what that answer was very shortly. Let me tell you where we're going in our broadcast today. First up on the program today, we're going to speak with Mindy Bells about two very important things that are taking place in our world today. One is the Mandela funeral, and specifically I wanted to talk to Mindy about the two faces of Nelson Mandela. Sometimes we've been hearing, and as the focus has been on Mandela the last couple of days, even more so again, we've been hearing one group saying, well, hold on a second, you know, the man had communist ties and, you know, he's not the Mandela that everybody seems to be making him out to be. And then on the other side, we've heard many great quotes from Nelson Mandela. And so they're just and you know, the entire message there about being a prisoner all the way to a president and so forth. And so how do we reconcile these two things? And Mindy Bells is going to help us to do that. And then secondly, we want to talk to Mindy about Iran as well. Of course, the big story there was the agreement that John Kerry seemed to broker there with Iran. But that has problems as well. Shortly after the agreement, the Iranian president was saying, not so fast. Your president is actually not being straight with the American people as to what the deal is really about. So two important issues. We want to talk a little bit about both of those with Mindy, editor of World Magazine, on the program today. And then second half of the program, I'll just give you a little bit of a sneak peek of where we're going there. We'll be speaking, or I'll be playing an interview that I did with Janet Mefford. Janet Mefford, you know, there was a lot of controversy surrounding Janet as a result of an interview she did with Mark Driscoll. This was the first interview that Janet did after that uproar with her interview with Mark Driscoll. And so Janet happened to be here in Greenville last week, and she had just previously kind of recanted what she had said about Mark Driscoll, was asked to, she removed the information from her website, let me put it that way. And so anyways, got a chance to talk with her, not specifically, real specific about that issue, but she did say some very interesting things during the interview, and so we want to let you hear those comments at the bottom half of the program. First up today, Mindy Bells. Mindy, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Mindy. We had mentioned, or I did in the interview there, the idea of the two faces of Nelson Mandela. I think some folks there from World Magazine covered it that way. I think Cal Thomas, is maybe the title of his piece, was about that story a little bit. I saw another reporter there for World Magazine was addressing some of these issues about Nelson Mandela and his piece, D.C. Ines, is that how you say it? But I think he had kind of dismissed the gainsayers or the naysayers about Nelson Mandela in his piece. And so I thought we could start out there, you know, that obviously the world's been focused on this funeral, a three-day commemoration of Nelson Mandela's life, and there's some other pieces that have taken place since then I want to mention, but just that general idea, would the real Nelson Mandela please stand up? Which one should we believe? What's the true picture of Nelson Mandela?
Well, I think to understand the true picture of Nelson Mandela, you have to understand the time that he lived in, and he began his work as an anti-apartheid activist during the Cold War. And at that time, client states and many in Africa were ones were somehow forced to choose. If they wanted to get ahead politically or militarily, they had to choose sides with the United States or with the Soviet Union. Nelson Mandela and the African National Congress didn't really have a choice. I don't want to be an apologist for them because the African National Congress did in some ways it was a violent movement and definitely had Marxist tendencies in its beginnings. But keep in mind that it, the United States is a full-on supporter of the white apartheid government in South Africa. The ANC had nowhere to turn but to the Soviet Union as its proxy. And so that was the beginnings of the movement. I think what's really interesting, and I actually was in South Africa a couple of years ago and made a point to visit Robben Island, where Nelson Mandela and other originating members of the ANC were in prison. Nelson Mandela served there for 18 years. He spent a total of 27 years in prison under the apartheid government. What I think is so interesting is that he succeeded where few rebel leaders, if we can call him that, have in modern history, and that is that he came out of this time as a quasi-Marxist, as a revolutionary, as someone who was part of a somewhat violent movement. He became a legitimate elected leader of a multiracial country when apartheid was dismantled in South Africa. The immediate effect of that was that black government would come to power because blacks were the majority there. And so as soon as there were elections, Nelson Mandela was elected. He became a legitimate leader, and he entered into the international stage as something of a Democrat. He went from his Marxist tendencies to denationalizing a number of industries in South Africa that had been nationalized under the white government. He, if you'll recall, he won the Nobel Peace Prize along with former President Botha, the white leader who helped to dismantle apartheid. There was a tremendous amount of reconciliation and rapprochement that went on during this time, and I think there are all kinds of things that countries around the world can learn from that and can learn from his example of how he evolved as a legitimate political leader.
Mm-hmm. I think that part of the conflicting reports then that we've been hearing as well from some of the conservative sources saying that, as you mentioned, about the background with the Communist Party, and supposedly there have now been some some proof of that that came to light later on, just a few years ago. Somebody found some documents that actually seemed to indicate that was in fact true, even though Mandela had denied it for a long period of time, but that he was part in the Communist Party. But then also people question about his reign and his rule, and they talk about the number of people that were actually killed in the struggles that took place afterwards. Primarily, I think they would term it as being black-on-black crime, but that, if I remember correctly, that was probably the period of time where the concept of neck lacing became a term that people became familiar with, where they would take a tire, an automobile tire, and put it over somebody's head with gasoline inside the tire and set it ablaze. I mean, it was just some of the most brutal and cruel ever experienced, I think, on the world stage. And that happened to be not during the period of apartheid, but during the period where Nelson Mandela was actually in power. So they were trying to, you know, basically say, just listen, this glamorous image that we have is not, you know, let's make sure that we're not glossing over all of the realities that were there as well. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think it's a fair assessment not to gloss over the inequalities, the violence that was there after Mandela took office. And I would say even to today, there continue to be tremendous, overwhelming pockets of poverty in South Africa, tremendous inequalities where, you know, the white population continues to dominate in many areas of business and commerce. Blacks have not succeeded in fully getting a place at the table, even though they have a very significant political place at the table. But we also know that politics isn't perfect, and certainly people are not perfect. And so I think, you know, I would point to the progress that South Africa has made, and especially as you look at the continent of Africa, it has the largest economy. It does not have the natural resources, say, of Nigeria with its oil stores, but it still has the largest economy, a thriving economy in many ways, and certainly an amazing success story if you consider where it has come from its apartheid past. Mm. Something I think we all could probably agree was not a humane form of government.
Mm. Speaking of the funeral then, or the events surrounding that, at least for the last 3 days, or will take up 3 days total, I think. There is some controversy that has arisen now as part of that. A couple of things have come up. One was, I don't know if you've seen this recently, but apparently the president was seen involved in what they refer to as a selfie, you know, where you're holding up a mobile phone and then taking a picture of yourself. And so him, along with, I think it was Cameron from the UK and the Danish Prime Minister, I believe.
Right.
And they were all involved in taking these pictures. And this was apparently during some point during the funeral services for Nelson Mandela. So it's all over, of course, the blogosphere and so forth, that, you know, just a little bit disrespectful to be having that type of a party sense about it when you're at a funeral. I just kept thinking of the Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and verse 2. It says, it is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to heart. And I've often talked about that when you go to a funeral, you know, it causes you to reflect upon your own mortality, the certainty of death, the brevity of life, and these types of things. And that's a very good process for us to go through when life is interrupted by the death of a loved one. And so, you know, it did seem a little bit disrespectful for the president to be participating in those types of activities at something like this. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would. I think it was a moment that was captured. You know, the technological age that we live in was actually captured by the technological age that we live in.
Mm.
And it, you know, you could on the one hand understand it being sort of a giddy moment, but as you say, why be giddy at a funeral? And especially if you're head of state, it's interesting that in the background you can see the First Lady Michelle Obama sitting very quietly and sort of meditatively, and you have to wonder if she was a little bit embarrassed by what was happening.
Mm.
She's not looking at the camera or anything like that. I think it's unfortunate. I have to tell you that I'm glad that our president could attend this funeral. I'm glad that we have an African American president who can represent us in Africa at a momentous time like this. I think none of us here in America fully appreciate, you know, just kind of the high standing that Nelson Mandela has had as a symbol across that continent, and a continent that desperately needs a symbol of democracy and freedom. And so it's, in one sense, it's wonderful that we have an African-American president who can stand in solidarity in unique ways at a time like this. On the other hand, you know, I couldn't help but recall that President Obama not only did not attend the funeral of Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher,
yes,
arguably a dominant force for freedom and democracy as well, and such a long-standing advocate for freedom, not only did not attend that funeral, didn't send anyone to attend it. The highest level official we had was like a second-ranking stand-in from the American embassy.
Hmm.
It was unconscionable. And so, you know, given that background, I found it even more sort of distressing that the president was caught in this giddy moment. And also the speech that he gave to me was a stump speech. It was very much of a campaign speech. It too, to me, did not reflect the kind of decorum, the kind of sobriety, and really the kind of weight that an American president can bring to a continent like Africa at a time like this.
I wholeheartedly agree, and I really agree with your comments there about Margaret Thatcher and the absolute dismal response that was made at her passing as well. Good point. Excellent point. There was another incident that took place at this, and it just seems that they talk about fumbling the ball, as the president likes to say so often. Here was an opportunity, like you say, for the statesmanship and so forth, and, you know, to really be able to represent the United States well at a meeting like this. But two things happened with the strongman leader of Cuba. One was the president went over and gave him a hearty handshake, was one thing. And, of course, here we are at the funeral of a man who was a political prisoner for so many years, and many people felt, obviously, not imprisoned justly and so forth. And yet here's the president shaking hands with a Cuban dictator who is doing the exact same thing, you know, to multitudes in Cuba as well. And then associated with that, and I'll get your comment on both of these, Senator Ted Cruz was there, and when the Cuban dictator spoke, Senator Cruz got up and left. He wasn't going to sit there and listen to this while it was so obvious that there were some in his own personal experiences there with his family in Cuba as well. So your comments on that part of the story?
Well, yeah, I think, again, you know, you can't let our leaders off the hook for not understanding the importance of these kinds of gestures. I mean, the president has been in office now in his second term. He has seen how the media picks up, how Americans and really people all over the world are following the most simple gesture, whether it's a handshake or a bow or any other kind of sign of deference. And so I don't think we can assume that this was in any way like casual or not thought through. I think these things are very carefully thought through in the same way that I imagine that Senator Cruz had thought ahead of time what he would do should the head of Cuba get up to speak. I kind of tend to think, Kevin, that both of those gestures lose the primacy of the moment. And the primacy of the moment was to honor the life of Nelson Mandela. And I have to say, Senator Cruz posted a really fine tribute to Nelson Mandela on his Facebook page. He got skewered for it. The comments were just vicious about that. And so, he obviously is someone who I think properly appreciates the contributions that Nelson Mandela has made and leaders like him. But that was the point of the moment. That was the point of being there, was not to make a political point in either case that you cited, but to honor the life of another leader. And I think that gets lost. And again, it comes back to a bit of showmanship that I think disappoints Americans, really disappoints our friends around the world, though.
Back to the point, or just to make a segue from the point about the lack of seriousness shown by the president during those photos that were snapped of them kind of fooling around during the funeral. I wanted to talk to you quickly about Iran as well. It doesn't seem that we are taking the threat with Iran as serious as we should be. Shortly after this agreement that was made between Iran and John Kerry representing us, of course, over there, shortly thereafter, the Iranian leaders were coming out and saying, your president is lying to the American people. He's misrepresenting what the agreement was really about, and that's not what we agreed to, and so forth. That doesn't bode well for this situation, nor does, it seems that they've been now given a green light. We've admitted, they have a right. We've changed course. They have a right now to enrich uranium. And, it just seems like we're not taking that threat as seriously as we should. Would you agree?
I think that's probably a correct assessment. I think I would add, perhaps not only the Obama administration has misrepresented this agreement. I would say the U.S. media has misrepresented this agreement in its rush to sort of trumpet it as a major breakthrough. It has been, from the beginning, an interim agreement, a first step, and I think it is, threatens to derail the whole process, that it is not being properly described as that by either the administration or those who are covering this issue. And so, for instance, you have a situation where the UN inspectors show up to visit the Iraq heavy water production plant. That's a facility inside Iran. Facility that's been highly controversial as one of the steps along the way to enriching uranium to the level of a nuclear weapon, and a place where Iran could produce a nuclear bomb. U.S. officials are talking about how the next thing will be to dismantle this plant. Well, that's nowhere in the agreement. And the Iranian officials are then quickly coming out and saying, no, we never said we would close the facility. And it sets up this this kind of atmosphere that's certainly not conducive to moving beyond an interim agreement to the next step, which, if you go back to the short speech that Obama gave on the night that this interim agreement was inked, he was careful. He was trying at that time, I think, to describe it accurately. That was late at night. Few Americans were watching, and the thing has kind of run away with itself since then. And I think we Americans and our leaders have a very distorted view now of what this agreement actually means. A number of people who are in a position to know, I think, in particular, John Bolton, the former ambassador. American ambassador to the UN, who also served as the head of the U.S. Disarmament Agency going way back. Right from the beginning, we're saying there are major problems with this agreement. If we can't fix them between this interim and the final process, we essentially are opening the door to not only to Iran continuing to enrich uranium to a military grade, because we know it's been doing that. We now know that, and we've confirmed that, but to doing it with our approval. And that's the problem we get into there is obvious. But, you know, one of the problems as we move toward this place is the problem that's going to present for our allies in the region. And interestingly, that's not only Israel. It's also Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. It's been very striking to watch the Arab allies of the United States line up against this agreement.
Yeah, I just was reading a poll this morning. A new Pew Research USA Today poll conducted says that 43% of Americans now disapprove of that agreement the more they learn about it, while 32% approve of it and 25% just don't know. And that was much different right after it was announced, of course, because people thought that, I think, their initial impression was that it had some real substance to it. As the details came out, it was like, it sounds like they got what they wanted, the freeing up of the sanctions, which the president was very pro-sanction for a long period of time, said the sanctions were doing their job and so forth. Well, then why remove the sanctions? So I think when the American people are finding out now the details of this, which are very sketchy, they're not in favor of it either. And so it seems to be clear to most people looking at it that it just isn't a very good deal for ourselves, and certainly not for our ally Israel in the region and other folks like you mentioned, Saudi Arabia and so forth. Mindy, thank you so much for shedding some light on these issues that we talked about today. Really enjoy your Globetrot work that you send out. I'll give the folks the address for that here in just a moment when we close out the broadcast. But thank you so much for being with us today again on the Knowing the Truth radio program and for the work that you guys do there at World Magazine. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Okay. That was Mindy Bells. Hey, this Christmas, by the way, when you if you order a copy of World Magazine, if you give it away as a gift, World Magazine was offering a $20 gift certificate to Crossway Books, Crossway Online, www.crossway.org. And so you can't beat this deal. You know, you can go ahead and get World Magazine, give it away as a gift to somebody, and then also get a little something for yourself maybe as you get a book from Crossway. So I just want to make sure you're aware of that. Let me tell you that you can find out more about Mindy and the work that she's doing in writing these articles, that Globetrot that she puts out. It's an email update that I get three times a week. And so she has these great updates on what's taking place around the world. It's called Globetrot. You can find out about it out at www.worldmag.com, worldmag.com. By the way, I see an article out there by Warren Cole Smith about Mark Driscoll. We're going to talk about that with Janet Mefford in just a couple moments. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.